Hello.
Hello, Senator McGovern.
Yes.
David Rappaport calling from Palo Alto High School. How are you today,
yes,
sir?
I'm just fine.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. We do, too. We have a group of people here very excited and anticipating your comments. And I just wanted to introduce you, if I could.
Sure.
Senator McGovern was the Democratic Party's nominee for president in 1972. He served in the House of Representatives from 1957 until 1961 and in the Senate for 18 years. He was president of the Middle East Policy Council in Washington, D.C. for 6 years and then ambassador to the UN Agencies on Food and Agriculture in Rome under President Clinton. He holds the Distinguished Flying Cross for service as a bomber pilot in World War II, the Presidential Medal of Freedom for humanitarian service, and he's a former professor of history with a Ph.D. at Northwestern. Since leaving the Senate in 1981, he's been a visiting professor at some 15 American and European universities. His speaking schedule takes him to countless colleges, campuses all over the world, and he's the author of a dozen books and numerous articles in journals and newspapers, including his most recent book, Out of Iraq, A Practical Plan for Withdrawal Now. So it is a real pleasure to have this opportunity to interact with you, Senator McGovern. Thank you for agreeing to this.
It's my pleasure.
What I wanted to start the interview off was asking you a domestic political question about what you think the Democrats' chances are to take both the House and the Senate.
I think very good. I'd be astonished if the Democrats don't win a majority in the House of Representatives, and I think we'll probably come out with a majority in the United States Senate. A great many Americans realize that the policies we're now pursuing, both at home and abroad, are not benefiting the average citizen. So I think you'll see some real changes come November 7th.
Now, in your book, you speak about this when you wrote the following sentence about nationalism. You said, "Nationalism is still the most powerful force of our times. In one country after another, it has defeated every attempt by rich, powerful, dominant powers to overturn and recast the lives of the peoples they conquered. In short, as we have seen in 3 years of war, there are limits to our power, and we must adjust to that reality." My question is, how will we adjust? What are the kinds of adjustments that we need to make as Americans to the new reality of nationalism, particularly in the Middle East?
The first step is to remove our troops from Iraq. People ask me, aren't you supporting our troops? And I say, you're darn right I am. That's why I want them out of Iraq, where they're being killed every day, killed and wounded. That war is a self-defeating effort on our part. A recent poll in Iraq showed that 81% of the Iraqi people want our army to withdraw. We Americans should appreciate that. We once had British troops quartered in the American colonies, and that was one of the principal causes of the American Revolution, was to get those foreign troops off our soil. The same factor is operating in Iraq today. The one thing that these warring factions, the Sunni Muslims, the Shia Muslims, and the Kurds all agree on is that they want the foreign army, namely our army, to leave their country. So that's the first big step we have to take. And then we ought to work more in cooperation with other countries. The whole world was against this American invasion of Iraq. We have to work within the framework of the United Nations, working with other countries. The present administration has spurned the Kyoto Treaty to protect the world against global warming. It has spurned the War Crimes Court to try war criminals. It has backed away from the UN position that we should not put American forces into Iraq. All across the board, we're following a unilateral go-it-alone, to heck with the rest of the world policy that we can ill afford to continue.
Thank you for that thoughtful answer. Therefore, do you think then that we have weakened our ability to defend ourselves in other arenas, say North Korea and Iran, because of our commitments to Iraq?
Oh, there's no question about it. We've lost terribly the influence and power we once had in the world. We're now the most feared country on the planet insofar as war is concerned. We're feared for the kind of reckless foreign policy we've been pursuing, even supporting torture as an instrument of American policy. I never thought we would see that day in America when we would be indicted by international opinion for practicing torture against people who had been incarcerated by the war and by our outreach in the world.
Senator, I wondered what you thought of Vice President Cheney's recent comments. I believe they were either 24 hours ago or within that period, in which he somewhat appeared to contradict President Bush's assertion that Americans, the American government, does not engage in torture, when he responded to a talk show's columnist's question by saying that if we could dunk a few people in cold water, it wouldn't be a big deal. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about in terms
of... Exactly. Cheney is the worst of the bunch in terms of betraying American principles and American ideals. But that combination of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld has greatly weakened the position of the United States in world affairs and has greatly aggravated the terrorist danger from disgruntled citizens, especially in the Middle East.
Let me shift for a moment to the issue of how this will play out for the next president. Assuming that the triumvirate of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld holds true until 2008, what do you think the prospects will be for the new Democratic and Republican candidates for president in a war that they will obviously still be fighting in 2008?
I think it'll take a generation for us to recover the position we held prior to the current administration. I think the damage has been so widespread and so severe that it'll probably take at least 15 or 20 years to rebuild the moral and political standing of the United States in the eyes of the world, and to restore the confidence of our own people in the institutions of government.
I wanted to ask you, while as a senator from South Dakota has produced some very inspiring politicians, yourself and Senator Daschle, but it's also has a very conservative streak, as I'm detecting from the fact that your state has only one abortion clinic, and it may be very challenging for women to get to that clinic. What are your views on the present state of your own home state and its changing of the guard, as it were, with Senator Daschle losing the last election?
It's always been a more or less conservative state, but South Dakotans do generally admire people who say what they honestly believe, even though the citizenry may sometimes disagree. If they're convinced that their leaders are saying what they honestly believe, they're willing to give them a trial. So Senator Daschle's been in high office in South Dakota for 30 years. That's a long time, first in the House, then in the Senate. I was in high office for 22 years as a liberal Democrat. So they do give us a chance once in a while, and that's the hope that keeps my interest up in South Dakota politics. This current abortion law is ridiculous. It's so unjust and so unfair and so autocratic, and it may be overturned in the referendum where it appears on the November 7th ballot. At the present time, those opposed to this oppressive bill are running a majority in the public opinion polls. I hope that holds until Election Day.
Let me ask you about some other controversial legislation.
I'm going to have to wind this up pretty soon because I have another radio interview coming up, and I can take one more question.
I'll ask my last question then. Let me ask you about some other legislation then, such as the detainee bill, which pretty much removes the right of habeas corpus, constitutionally speaking. I wondered if you could just comment on the general usurpation of power by the executive branch. As a government teacher, I'm particularly concerned that the administration may be strengthening the power of the executive branch.
Well, there's no question. That's been a deliberate effort to greatly concentrate more authority in the hands of the president, to weaken the courts, to weaken the Congress, and to undercut some of our most precious values, which is the right to know, once we're seized by government authority, why are we being held? That's what habeas corpus is all about. This is a terrible bill. I hope it'll be voted out in the next Congress.
Senator, we want to thank you for your time, and particularly under the circumstances, it's just grand of you to take this time and to allow us to interact with you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm an old history teacher, so I've always loved students and teachers. All the best to you.
Thank you, sir. Good day.
Bye-bye.